know how I cried the day you said goodbye. Day by day, I'm losing my blues. More and more, I'm forgetting about you.
This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Thom Young. He is a writer from Texas. Thom, it is great talking to you.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And I'm also joined here with my co-host, Pillator.
Hi, Thom.
How's it going up there, wherever y'all are?
Robert's in California, and I'm in Philadelphia.
Oh, nice. Well, it's going to get down to 22 in Texas, which is pretty cold for Texas, at least.
Yeah, it's probably around here, maybe about a little under 60 degrees, like 58.
And that's in Philadelphia?
Huh. No, I'm in Southern California.
Philadelphia, there was a snow. And it kind of is, there's a little glaze of snow on the ground. It's kind of like winter up here.
Well, I live in West Texas, so it can get pretty cold up here, despite what you might hear, opposed to like South Texas where it gets hot. So,
you know, what's interesting is I've heard a lot of people compare California's Central Valley, places like Bakersfield, to West Texas, and those photographs on the cover, especially the book Noir, that like the old mid-century sign that's kind of run down in the field in the background, like that reminds me a lot of parts of California, like if you take road trips through the Central Valley or even parts of the Central Coast.
Yeah, I think there's probably some similarities. Of course, I think Bakersfield, if I recall, has pretty good music scene, as does West Texas, so maybe a similar.
Oh yeah, I think Merle Haggard was from Bakersfield.
Yeah, I think he was too. And of course, Texas, we have Buddy Holly, you know, out here in Lubbock, and Waylon Jennings, and a lot of good country music, you know, real outlaw country music.
Outlaw. I mean, when I think of country, I think of Hank Williams, but outlaw is an interesting genre of its own.
Yeah, I would say Hank Williams is pretty much like the original.
Did you grow up in West Texas?
Actually, I grew up all over Texas. My dad was a coach, and we moved around like every three or four years, so I've lived all over Texas. I was born in Temple, which is kind of between Waco and Austin, you know, where the Branch Davidian compound burned down. So that's kind of a claim to fame in that area. But I've lived all over Texas, but I've lived in West Texas for the last maybe 3 years. So,
what are some aspects of Texas that have influenced your writing?
I think a lot of it is just kind of the independent, spirit, and living in West Texas, you got a lot of open space and plains, and I think that kind of contributes to my writing. I kind of like stories about on the border, between Mexico and Texas, and just kind of that kind of feel, kind of an open space type thing. And I get a lot of ideas just from that area. A lot of my stories take place in a place called Perico, which is it's basically like a ghost town in between a place called Dalhart, Texas, on the way to Clayton, New Mexico. It's out in the middle of nowhere. And so it has a lot of interesting history, and a lot of that's just kind of a big inspiration for me as far as writing.
You've had work published in Poetry Quarterly. Can you talk about that? Are you talking about poetry or your novels or both?
Well, yeah, with those you mentioned is the poetry. I'd submit my work like all over, primarily my poetry. But yeah, as far as the poetry journal, that was kind of an interesting one. Just it was a poem that I'd written. I'm trying to remember which one it was, but it was called Purple Onion, which was one I just kind of came up with real quick. And I just submitted like the first time, and actually the editor said it was like real rare for anyone to like get in there, you know, like right away. He said people try, you know, for a long time. So I felt kind of fortunate on that. And I think with Common Line Journal, it was, I don't know if they're affiliated with like Evergreen College or maybe it's some of the graduate students there. And that was just one that I had seen, and I think I had two poems published with them, and so I thought that was kind of a neat deal. And then actually with 3AM magazine, which is kind of a, you know, a more, I don't know if you'd say famous, but maybe it's more well known, actually one of the editors from them, his name I believe is Darren Anderson, he actually saw my blog and just asked me would I be interested, you know, being published with them. I said, of course. So I said, just pick out like something you want on my blog called Me and This Machine. And so he just picked something like a story on there. And that was kind of up to him. So I didn't really, you know, like submit to them. It was more of him just kind of seeing my blog, and he liked some of the stuff I had on there. And so that's kind of how that one worked out.
I really like the illustrations on the cover of your book. Did you design them?
Actually, I've done some, but my brother is an artist as well, and so he's done a lot of them. His name is Jeb, and he's a really good artist here, and he has a company here in Texas, which is really taken off, and they do like Texas-themed shirts. They're called Tumbleweed Textiles, and so it's nice having a real talented older brother. So I'll just look at some of his stuff and see if he let me use it as a cover, and he always does. So that's where a lot of the covers come from. And some of them I've done myself, you know, you can, with the way technology is now, you can kind of, you know, come up with pretty much anything, which is, you know, it makes it pretty easy to, you know, do a cover and get a book ready to go pretty soon. So
which ones did you design?
Oh, I've got like so many books. I always joke with my, you know, like social media, like people that follow me, like I have a godzillion like books. So I've done like so many. I actually ended up like deleting like a lot because I had so many. But I've done my last poetry one, which was a little black dress called Madness, Volume 2. I did that one, and then also the first book in that series I did, and I've done a lot of my, you know, like I've done.
Bio says that was a number one hit at poetry in Germany.
Yeah, the original one hit number one in Germany, and that was my first, like, number one poetry one, which was kind of a running joke, at least on, like, Instagram, because I beat Poe, which I thought was kind of funny, so I kind of hyped that up a little bit. And then I kind of got like some flack from a review I had, which was really funny. And so that's kind of like a running joke with some of the people I know, or at least keep in contact with on Instagram. So yeah, that was actually the first one that hit number one in Germany. So,
as far as the aesthetic and artistic imagery, do you have like a special interest? I noticed a lot of your covers have a very film noir feel to them, and there's also a fascination with the kind of a mid-century aesthetic. I mean, I'm a big fan of a lot of the like mid-century road signage.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of always have liked that, and I like, you know, like retro type things. I'm really like into like 1970s type nostalgia and like kind of retro like furniture, and you know, I don't know how much that relates, but I've always kind of liked that kind of style and kind of the, you know, like a darker type image type things like that. A lot of my poetry is not real, like, inspiring. I kind of tend to be more interested in things that are, you know, kind of the unknown or, you know, kind of dangerous type things. And, you know, I think real life type things, you know, people deal with lots of things that are painful and, you know, our struggles and all that. So that's kind of, I'm more interested in those type of things as far as, you know, I guess what you would call aesthetic or, you know, just kind of the way I write, I guess. I'm not really interested in, like, a lot of the type things you see, you know, primarily, like, on Instagram, a lot of the, you know, positive love type poems or, you know, what they call, like, she poetry. I'm not really into that, but actually I've one of the things I like to do is, like, satire type writing, and I've been able to just satire, like, a lot of the popular, I guess you would call them Instagram she poets, and it's kind of funny because I went from, like, 9,000 followers to over, like, 30,000 just by writing, like, really bad, like, she poems. So, I don't know what that says about our society.
Yeah. You can do both. You can do, like, the she poems, like, to bring in, like, the hits, and then, like, you can bring them to what you really want them to read.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What I've done is, like, I get, you know, you grow an audience, and then end up buying, like, a book of your real, like, poetry, and hopefully that kind of maybe turns them on to some new type writings and a new style of poetry than just, you know, reading the kind of she type stuff. And so I've kind of used that as a marketing thing. It's actually, it's been, you know, pretty successful. Not that I've, you know, sell a whole lot of books, but I do pretty good for, like, kind of an independent writer, I would say. So.
Were you ever influenced by Lewis L. Moore?
You know, to be honest, I do know who he is, but I haven't read a whole lot of his work. I definitely do know who he is, but, you know, like I said, I haven't really read him. But definitely, as far as, like, the Western type stuff, I've always liked that kind of genre. I like a lot of, I read primarily, like history type things, and I've read a lot on, like, Doc Holliday and Tombstone and any kind of, like, history stuff I like. And so I think that's probably a bigger, like, influence on as far as, like, writing maybe my, like, novels and things like that. And yeah, I certainly know who he is. I'm just, you know, but like I say, I haven't read that much of him.
You contacted us via our interview we did with Scott Laudati. How did you meet Scott?
Well, Scott is, the way I met him was actually, like, through his blog, I believe. It's been several years ago, but I just contacted him because I liked his writing, and we kind of kept in touch. And then he actually was published with 48th Street Press out of New Jersey, and they do a broadside series, which... it's really, it's kind of a famous deal as in far as they publish a lot of, you know, pretty big, like, poets. One was Doug Blazek, who, you know, he was one of the early guys that published Bukowski. And the guy that actually runs it, his name is Chris, and he kind of invited me to do that, although you still have to, you know, submit. And so Scott kind of let me know about that. And so I've been doing that the last couple of years, which has been a really neat thing. But yeah, Scott's kind of a guy that, you know, although we've never met, it's just been through, like, correspondence. He's a writer, like, I really respect. And, you know, I enjoy, like, reading his work. I mean, I just read his new novel. And I thought it was great. You know, I read it in like a day, Play the Devil. And I just thought, you know, this is a book I wish I had written. So, but yeah, we kept in touch, and that's kind of how we met, just through correspondence, talking about writing type things. And so so that's kind of how I got to know him a little bit.
Who were your biggest literary influences?
I think, of course, you know, I like Bukowski, and I think a lot of people say him, but I really like Hermann Hesse is probably my all-time favorite writer. And I just like the way he writes, and you know, the way he kind of incorporates, you know, some nature and things like that. But I think his novel that I like the best is Beneath the Wheel, and I think that was that's one of my favorite novels by him, just the way you know, he writes, and he's definitely one of my favorites. Also like John Fonte, and his son actually Dan Fonte has probably like a little more, you know, just with his type of style of poetry and his novels I like as well. So those are probably a few. You also like Hubert Selby, so.
Oh yeah, I love Last Exit to Brooklyn, Requiem for a Dream. I grew up with those. One of my favorites.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Are you familiar with Feral House and Nine Banded Books publications? They're known for like a fringe avant-garde underground publications.
I've heard of them, but I don't know like that much about them, to be honest.
Mm. Do you know of Jim Goad?
I haven't heard of him.
He's very similar too. He's also an outlaw country musician himself. Some of his stuff is played live, and he's very into that whole country thing too. And it's apparent in his writing too. He's most famous for "Answer Me," which is kind of this, you could say, like Hunter S. Thompson post Gonzo journalism. But are you a fan of the Gonzo journalism?
Yeah, I mean, I like that style, and I like Hunter Thompson, and you know, stuff like that. I've read a few of his books, and I kind of like that, you know, period out of, I guess you'd say, maybe from the Beats, like on a little bit, you know. I kind of like that, like, you know, Kerouac, of course. And actually, I'm not a like huge like fan of like Ginsberg, but even though I've read some of Hal, which I thought was pretty good. And but yeah, I kind of like all that stuff in that period, maybe. So a lot of that is really neat, and I like, you know, I read so much that I try to read like, you know, all kinds of different genres and styles kind of from that period. And I like older stuff too, you know, from the 19th century on, and I like a lot of like I said, history type things too. So,
is there a theme of depression and alienation in your work?
Oh, I'd say definitely. That's a big theme. I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with, you know, including myself at times. And I think, you know, that's just something that's always kind of been more interesting to me. I'm kind of more interested in kind of the dark type of things instead of, you know, maybe not so much into the positive type things. I think it's always more interesting, especially with characters, you know, maybe if they're a little bit of both, a little flawed, you know, they maybe have some good qualities, but maybe they have a little bit more, you know, bad qualities, something like that.
Do you generally focus from the perspective of one character and the whole story is from that character's perspective, or is it more like a bunch of different characters interacting, or do you like to focus on this one specific main protagonist?
Yeah, I think that's definitely a theme, but you know, I usually, most of my books have like a lot of characters, and I mean, I have all kinds of like stuff going on like all the time, and I think a lot of times that's, you know, that's just how I write. I don't have a set plan. I just sit down and start writing, and it's kind of just piece it together, you know, as I go. But I have some books that have a lot of characters with a lot of, you know, like things going on. And it kind of just all, you know, not incoherent, but just kind of jumps around a lot. And then I have some maybe focus a little bit more on one particular character, but definitely lots of characters in all my books for sure.
You have a book of poetry, Dead Flowers, titled A New Collection of Poems for a Modern Society. Can you talk about the themes of those poems?
Yeah, with Dead Flowers, it was more of a kind of more leaning towards the dark type of things, you know, but But, you know, really with my poetry books, like, I really don't have any idea, like, what they're going to be about. Like I said, I just sit down and write them. I can write maybe 60, 70 poems in one setting and have the whole book done maybe in, like, an hour and a half or 2 hours. And then I can publish it the next day, and then, you know, usually be on Amazon within, you know, a day or so. So, I mean, I don't ever, like, think, like, I'm going to write, like, this type of poems, or I'm going to have this theme. I just, like, come up with a title, and then I'll just sit down and write a whole book maybe in a
I really like the cover for Dead Flowers. You have these two skyscrapers. They sort of look like man-made flowers in a sense, very kind of a 70s, like, retro-futurism. I think that's Chicago. Where did you get the inspiration for using that image?
Yeah, I mean, that's just something. I've seen those in Chicago, and, of course, if you've seen Wilco's album, you know, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, they have that on there as well. And I just thought it looked cool, and I like the kind of the dark, you know, black and gray kind of, you know, aesthetic, I guess. And I just thought that kind of went well. And so it ended up working out, you know, pretty good for a cover, so.
What is Grindhouse about, and consider yourself a fan of Grindhouse films? We recently had Grindhouse film director Jim Van Bever on this show, and also our show we did about Robert Brenner on Times Square. He talked about the Grindhouse theaters and used like an image of a Grindhouse theater on the cover.
Yeah, I'm definitely a big fan of that genre. In particular, the late 70s and early 80s, and I like those, you know, slasher movies or B movies. And with Grindhouse, what I did was basically take three novels and combine it in one book, and kind of tried to make it like a movie. Like, the first part was kind of like a preview, which was a preview of like a story I had called Damon, which was kind of a horror type story about a guy who's kind of a serial killer. And then after that, it was just kind of a preview. And then I went into one that was a Western genre called Westland. And it was it's like a futuristic Western. And it's just kind of a crazy like book. It's kind of like, it's got the cowboy and outlaw element and like the Western genre with kind of a modern type twist, as far as, you know, they have like microchips and it gets into like a lot of, I guess you'd say prostitution, just kind of that genre, you know, back then with the saloons and opium trade. It has the Chinese and just a lot of crazy like stuff in there. And then after that, I had one called Blood South, which is probably my favorite thing I've done, which is, it's really kind of hard to describe what it's about. It's about a small town, like sheriff, you know, close to the Texas-Mexico border that finds a like body in a hotel, and it just kind of escalates from there. It's kind of a, not really a mystery, but it's just kind of a weird, like, Western type, you know, lots of just crazy like stuff going on. And it kind of ends up being a lot about like drug cartels. And there's really, I mean, it's kind of like the strangest thing I've ever written. But it's my favorite one. And then the last one is called Noir, which is I wanted to do like a old, like a hard boiled, like crime detective novel. And that was kind of my take on that. And, it was a fun one to write. So basically Grindhouse has just got three kind of novels in it and then a preview. So that's kind of what it is. But like you said, I enjoy that genre and I think it was a real interesting time as far as filmmaking.
Are you a fan of the film noir genre?
Yeah, I like the genre, but were you talking about a particular film?
Just in general, there's a film noir, but I guess there's also kind of a neo-noir, like films inspired by that.
Yes, like for film noir films, I mean, certainly we could be talking about like Philip Marlowe with The Big Sleep and novelization, but when we say film noir, we were talking about the black and white detective films, and I guess the cliche cyberpunk film noir is like Blade Runner, right? But, you know, we could be talking about really older films.
I would say that cyberpunk is sort of a modern continuation of film noir.
Well, there's the black and white films.
Yeah, a lot of the older ones like Maltese Falcon and I don't know if you've even like considered like Casablanca, something along those lines. I like that type of stuff, but you know, to be honest, I haven't seen a lot of those older type movies, just, you know, a few of them, but I definitely am interested in always learning more about film because, you know, as a writer, I think it's kind of interesting to kind of, you know, you can get ideas or images from that. I think one thing I like, you know, of one director I like his movies is David Lynch. And I think he's an inspiration to a lot of my like work as far as with his, you know, just the way his movies are. And they're, you know, they're not like a straight line narrative. You got all kinds of like things going on at the same time, and I think it's really cool that he, a lot of his movies, he lets the, you know, the viewer decide, you know, they can, he's not giving you like an answer, you know, you have to kind of, you can interpret it how you want, and to me that's always an interesting aspect with writing. As far as poetry, I like that too, and I think it's more interesting for the reader to kind of decide or interpret it, you know, how they see it.
Yeah, that's the thing with literature. You can always interpret it different ways. Film, most movies are very much like this is exactly how everything is, and it doesn't leave any room for your imagination. Do you have a particular favorite David Lynch film?
Well, I like Blue Velvet, but also probably my favorite one by him is Mulholland Drive. I thought that movie was really like amazing, just the way it wasn't like a linear, you know, there was all kinds of different things going on. And I mean, I saw it and I was like trying to figure it out. And I kept going back and watching it and trying to, you know, you pick up on things. I think that's what makes him a great director is because, I mean, he does make the audience guess and try to figure it out. And I think that's why he has such a great, I don't know if you'd say a cult following, but he's definitely not a mainstream, you know, it's not like you're going to watch a movie just to, you know, watch explosions or be entertained. You actually have to watch and pay attention to the movie, and then you think about it after, which and always, you know, I think that's a great thing. So,
Pilliter, are you a David Lynch fan?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that because I really like the band Juju, and we were talking with Jamie Stewart on the show, and he had a whole album about Twin Peaks and the soundtrack behind of that. I mean, when I think about David Lynch, I'll probably think about Twin Peaks, but I really like Dune. I mean, it's such an underrated film, but David Lynch's adaptation of Dune is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I have Dune as well, and I thought that was a really interesting movie. And I don't know if this is true, but I heard that he was going to be the original director for Return of the Jedi.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that too. I think the story went was he was going to do that, or it was, I think it was, but then he dropped it because of another, I think it was Dune or something like that. I mean, originally it was supposed to be Jodorowsky was going to do the original Dune, but then Lynch got the Dune, and it's kind of a strange project in it. Imagine if Lynch was to do Star Wars, that would be very interesting indeed.
That would have changed the whole franchise. Yeah, I mean, I thought that would have been really interesting, but I had heard that. I didn't know if it was for sure true, but I think that would have been really neat if he did that. I would have loved to have seen his take on it.
Are there any political themes in your novels?
I don't get too political. Actually, I'm not political at all, just in general. I've never voted in my life, and I'm not into politics or I kind of see through, you know, I don't know if there's such a huge difference between Republicans or Democrats. And I think, in my opinion, we really just have a one-party system. So politics is something I don't really get into, although, you know, definitely on, like, Instagram, I do a lot of satire as far as politics, and I kind of show the hypocrisy of both sides. So I'm interested in politics as far as that aspect. I'm not interested in, like, supporting a candidate or political party at all.
Are you interested in sort of mocking and satirizing, like, the dominant social culture?
A lot of the times. I mean, as far as with my satire, I can, like, pretty much satire anything, really. I mean, I do a lot of, like, politics, and at least on Instagram, and I do social issues. I kind of just point out, you know, a lot of the hypocrisy or kind of the maybe stupidity of everything, you know. I'm kind of just against politics, so it's just always fun to kind of point out, you know, just kind of how both sides are pretty much the same, you know, maybe a few differences on a few issues, but overall I think they're kind of, you know, it's kind of the same thing.
Do you have any particular issues that you feel strongly about?
As far as
political or cultural or social issues?
Well, I'm big into liberty and individual freedom. I think people should make up their own decision about what they want to do. And I'm definitely not into, like, government interfering in, you know, our lives. I think the federal government's gotten too out of control, and they're definitely, you know, are taking away, you know, kind of the individuality that the America was really founded on. As far as, you know, liberty and things like that, I think now we just have more of a tyrannical type, big brother, maybe type of government now.
Speaking of which, I've seen on your websites and your you have pictures of typewriters. I know you have a computer to write your novels on, but have you ever used an authentic typewriter before?
I have, and actually I have, like, really big hands, so it's tough for me to... I had an old, like, Smith Corona that I would type on a few years ago, and it just wasn't comfortable for me, mainly because I had, a stroke when I was 13, so my left hand shakes all the time, so it's very tough for me to write, you know, on a typewriter just because my left hand shakes so much, so... With the computer, I have an older computer with a bigger keyboard, so it's a little easier for me to write on. I can primarily just use my right hand, and I just kind of hold my left hand, you know, steady on the side of the other keyboard. So basically, I just write with my, like, right hand. So
I recently got this thing. It's called an Astro House FreeWrite, and it's a digital typewriter. It's basically the size of, it looks like a laptop, but it actually has a built-in a word processor within the machine. All you have to do is you plug it in, it's battery operated, you turn it on, it looks like a ebook, but it has keyboards on there, and you just write it wherever you go. And whenever I want to write, but if I find a lot of distractions, I'll write it on my FreeWrite, and now all I have to do is just press send, and it'll be sent as an email to my computer, and I find that very of a... It's interesting, the writing process, how you can, you know, especially it seems if you're on the computer, you can get easily distracted from things.
Yeah, and I think that works good for me because I'm always distracted. So it's hard for me to, like, focus on, like, writing something for a long amount of time. I mean, if I can write something, like, on a novel, if I write for, like, an hour, that would be, like, a long period of writing for me. I need to, like, you know, I can't just sit down and write, like, for 18, 20 hours or whatever. I've got to take breaks, or I've got music on, or I'm reading something. I've got four or five things that I'm doing at the same time. So that's kind of just how my mind is. You know, I don't know if you call it adult ADD, but I don't like focusing on one particular thing, you know, at a time, which is, I'm also a teacher, so that makes it kind of difficult sometimes. You know, because you do have to focus on certain things. So, but at the same time, it also opens ways to be creative and you know, you can do more of interesting type things as well. So, you know, but that sounds like a pretty neat digital typewriter. I may have to look into that. Might be interesting to use something like that.
I noticed with your novels, you have single titles like Suck, Patsy, Noir, Sarah. What's behind the singular titles? And there's another English author, intellectual named Jonathan Bowden, who had titles like Mad and Sod and Right and Blood.
Yeah. You know, to be honest, like I like the shorter titles, but it's not something like I think like I'm going to do this like on purpose. It's just kind of whatever kind of relates to the book. Maybe I think it's, you know, a lot of times I just like a shorter title so I can fit it, you know, on the book the way I've done some of my covers. So it's probably not something that I've have thought about. I need to have shorter titles. It's just something that's kind of, I guess, worked out as far as like space wise or, you know, just something that relates to the book maybe.
KMFDM does the same thing with its 5-letter album titles. Was it Naive, Nihil, Angst, Adios? Anesh was on the show, and yeah, it's interesting. There's that tradition of just a single word can definitely get your attention. One word I like is ultra. Right. It seems very powerful or something, you know? And then somebody's willing to, Wyndham Lewis's Blast. That's a better example, and that's a form of this kind of. I don't know how to describe Wyndham Lewis's poetry, but definitely the modernist kind of thing where it's like cut-ups and avant-garde and very artsy at the same time and full of energy.
Pilliner, didn't you say you've read The Art of Being Ruled?
Yes, I have a copy of Wyndham Lewis's Art of Being Ruled. I enjoyed it much. It's a very good modernist read.
How would you describe the overall theme?
Well, for Wyndham Lewis, he's definitely a difficult figure to understand because he's also a fine artist and a writer, and he does the art for most of his books, and The Art of Being Ruled is just pretty much Wyndham Lewis's philosophy from whatever subject you can think of. And his whole argument is, you know, based upon society and where it's going. Maybe it might be a dystopian future, but certainly he was definitely caught up with the whole nationalist and fascist fervor of the time. So you can see where he's coming from, though. But yeah, Wyndham Lewis is pretty interesting.
And there are these kind of writers like Ferdinand Selene, and then more modern writers like Andy Nowicki and Anne Sturzinger. And they're kind of affiliated, I guess, with the dissident right. I don't know how you describe them politically, like what label to put on them, but they write a lot about the theme of alienation and depression. And the other writer is Michel Houellebecq. Are you familiar with those writers?
Definitely Selene. Just kind of, he had mentioned dystopian type things. Book I read recently was by Anthony Burgess, The Waiting Seed,
mm-hmm.
which was I don't know if you're familiar with that book. And I thought that was an amazing book, and just how really, you know, far ahead of time it was. And I thought it was very, you know, a satire type book, and it was very funny. And of course, I like his other books, you know, Clockwork Orange. But I think that book was really, really interesting. And I actually have never read like 1984, even though I'm very like familiar with it. I've never read the whole like book, but I definitely like the dystopian type things like that. And I think that's kind of, you know, what Burgess did was pretty much predict kind of the way our society is now. And I mean, it was just kind of amazing reading that book and kind of seeing some similarities to the way our society is.
Are you a fan of science fiction, and do you have a favorite science fiction writer?
You know, honestly, I'm not like a huge fan of science fiction, although I do, you know, I do like a little bit. But as far as like reading science fiction, not really. I mean, I'm more interested in like, you know, history, like I said. I like maybe what people would say like conspiracy type things. I like things like that, but not particular science fiction. I don't really read a whole lot of that.
What are your favorite history and conspiracy novels?
Well, a lot of history. One of the best books I read was called Voices in the Pacific, which was about World War II in the Pacific on the islands, Iwo Jima primarily, which is, you know, where a lot of the book focused on. It was basically about Marines that were there, and it was just telling their, like, stories, you know, individual stories. And my grandfather actually fought at Iwo Jima, so it was really interesting to learn about, you know, the places that he was at, and just to hear, I mean, like, their stories is, like, unbelievable. And I watched also the miniseries, like, The Pacific, that was on HBO. I think Spielberg directed it, and it was really, like, good, and just kind of brought it to life. And but I like all kinds of World War II type things. I like Civil War type things like that. I like a lot of, like, the real, like, Old West type things. Basically, I just read lots of history books. As far as maybe slanted towards the conspiracy type things, I like Jim Mars. I like his books. He had one called Rise of the Fourth Reich, which I thought was really interesting. It kind of compared the Third Reich, you know, Nazis, with kind of some things that are happening in the United States. And I thought that was really, really interesting. So he's probably my favorite, like, as far as what you might say conspiracy type writer.
Is there a theme of travel and road trips in any of your novels?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the first things I wrote, Laredo Down, which is kind of a murder, like, mystery along Texas-Mexico border, definitely about traveling in the West and, you know, going out and kind of just, you know, being on your own and that kind of theme, maybe just kind of on the road, I guess. But yeah, I think that's definitely something a lot of my work focuses on, you know, an individual or maybe a loner type character that travels, you know, just kind of the adventures they get in, I guess. But definitely travel is something I like, and I wish I could, you know, travel some more, but I try to go when I can. And I went to Iceland recently, and that's probably my favorite place I've been. So,
do you have a favorite road trip in the United States?
Yeah, I like, we go to outside Creed, Colorado. Every year we kind of have, like, a cabin there, and I think it's probably my favorite place. And but, you know, I always took road trips, like, when I was in graduate school, we went, you know, all over to, you know, New Orleans and then up into the South and, you know, down to the Outer Banks, North Carolina, Charleston, and down to Florida, went out to Key West, and kind of went to all the, just, we didn't really have plans, we just went on the road, and it was just a lot of fun. You know, I think you learn a lot just by traveling, obviously experiencing new cultures and things like that. But yeah, I mean, that's probably my favorite place is Colorado there. But I like, you know, lots of places, New Mexico and Santa Fe and, you know, Ruidoso, things like that. So
I know with travel, it really, like, opens up your mind. Like, one day you can have all these different experiences. Well, if you have your sort of same mundane life in the same place, like, you can spend maybe 5 years and it all kind of is one big blur. But if you're constantly traveling, I think it's a way to kind of extend your lifespan.
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, being a teacher, you know, I actually have just, for the last 2 years, I've done nothing but, like, write. But, you know, now that I've got back into teaching, you know, one good thing is you do get, you know, a nice time in the summer to travel. And I think that really helps, you know, after teaching and kind of doing the same thing, to kind of have a break and be able to travel and go out and do what you want. And I think, like you said, that really just kind of opens you up to new experiences. And plus, you know, going to Iceland and, you know, Europe, and they're always fascinated with Texas, you know, the people I've met and I think kind of the image they have is like the TV show Dallas. And I always thought that was kind of funny, just their perceptions of Texas. And they seem to be really fascinated by that. So, and I, you know, of course, about their culture as well. So,
what do you think about like all the futuristic architecture in Dallas? Like there's that sort of 80s skyscraper with the turquoise green neon. And then there's that building from the 70s. I forget what it's called, but it has that big ball of light bulbs.
Yeah, I think Dallas, I mean, I lived in Dallas for 16 years, and it's an interesting city. I mean, just with its history, and it does have some interesting architecture, like you said, and I'm not really, like, you know, too into, like, architecture, but it is kind of interesting. I think Dallas has, like I said, interesting history, and of course, JFK was assassinated there, and that's something I'm really fascinated with. But yeah, I mean, I kind of like that kind of style, I guess, but it's probably not something I really have thought that much about until you just brought it up.
Are you into hiking and traveling, like, to the mountains, mountain climbing?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I go to the mountains like every summer, and I definitely enjoy that. I'm more into, like, trout fishing. I enjoy that. Just, you know, I go with my dad and my brother, our family. And
is this the Colorado Rockies?
Enjoy. Yeah, it's in Colorado by kind of the San Juan Mountains more. There by where the Rio Grande Reservoir starts, outside Creed, which is like a mining town there. But it's definitely a beautiful, like, area, and yeah, I definitely like the outdoors type things when I can. Of course, you know, being a rider, a lot of times you spend time indoors and riding too, so it's kind of maybe a balance of both, maybe.
Do you see, like, your location, how does that affect your riding style, whether you're riding indoors or you're riding up in the mountains?
It doesn't really affect me. I mean, maybe it gives me some more ideas if I'm outdoors, but like I said, as far as me with riding, I can just sit down and ride anytime. I don't have to, you know, necessarily think about it, I guess. It's just kind of how my mind is. I think it's something I've talked a little bit about with a few people. Maybe I've kept in touch with, you know, when I had my stroke, like I had kind of a new sense of, like, creativity afterwards, which, you know, upon, like, researching that, that's kind of something that actually can be as a result of, like, having a traumatic, like, brain injury. You kind of find, like, a new sense of creativity. As far as with me, obviously, it's I wanted to do, like, writing all the time. So I think that's, you know, kind of maybe makes my brain a little different as far as writing. It's not. Go ahead.
Were you a writer prior to your stroke, or you started writing after that?
Well, I definitely wrote before, like, you know, but being, I was 13, so, but definitely afterwards I had more of a sense of creativity as far as, like, wanting to write, like, all the time, you know.
We are getting close to the end of the show. Thom, is there anything you'd like to add about your work that we didn't get a chance to touch upon?
Yeah, I mean, just as far as writing, I think it's important to, you know, at least for me, is I'm kind of more into the academic side as far as, you know, submitting my writing to primarily literary journals and, you know, at universities. And to me, that's probably the most important thing. And I think there's something to be said for actually having, like, the craft in your writing and going through a submission process and getting in, you know, more academic type things as far as journals. To me, that's always been kind of my first love as far as writing and submitting my work, even though maybe that's kind of a lost art nowadays. I still think that's an important thing. And actually, through that, I got, you know, nominated for the Pushcart Prize, I think, for this year. So, you know, I think that's important. That's kind of where my emphasis is. As far as, you know, like, social media, I just kind of use it as promotion and just kind of something that's fun. I don't really think that's a very serious type of writing, in my opinion, you know, so.
Do you have an upcoming novel that you're working on that's going to be released soon?
Yeah, actually I do, but it's kind of in the early works. It's called Instapoet, which is kind of a play on that phrase, which is on Instagram, and I'm actually writing it with another writer, so that's kind of new for me as far as a collaboration type thing, so that's kind of interesting dynamic, and this other writer is really, really good, so it's a challenge for me to kind of play off what he is writing. So I think it's, if we ever finish, it'll be something really special and maybe piss off a lot of people on Instagram. But maybe that's kind of the intention in a satirical type work. So, yeah, that hopefully they will finish that someday. I don't know. But I'm always writing poems and stories too, so.
Thom Young, it's been an excellent show. Thank you for being on.
Yeah, thanks so much for you guys having me and the great questions, and I appreciate you letting me spend a little time talking.
Also, thanks, Pillator.
Nice to talk to you, Thom. Okay. I'll have to check out some of your work later on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.